This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us this morning in studio are Dr. Shannon Makikau, Chief of Pulmonary and Sleep Department at Kaiser Permanente Hawaii, and Dr. Dennis Nagata, who's with the Landmark Dental Group and who's been trained in sleep dentistry. Welcome to you both. Today we're talking about sleep disorders and how to treat them. So Dr. Makikau, set the stage for us. What happens if you don't get enough sleep?
So as you might imagine, sleep is something that is incredibly important. In a 24-hour day, we're supposed to get anywhere between 7 and 9 hours of sleep per night on a regular basis. And that's about a third of our lifetime. And when sleep is insufficient, meaning we're not getting enough sleep or the quality of that sleep is poor, it can be felt in so many ways, both at night and during the day. So oftentimes when sleep is poor, it's difficult to focus, energy is low, it can impact our cognitive functions, meaning difficulty in terms of concentrating, poor memory. So productivity goes down and risk of accident, whether it's at work or behind the wheel of a car, goes up tremendously as well.
What about just overall health?
So interestingly, you know, sleep has a widespread impact. We can see that poor sleep impacts our immune system. So poor sleep can lead to increased risk for infections. It can also, in the long run, start to impact things like obesity, risk for high blood pressure, and even heart disease.
So you see all of those then?
Absolutely, yeah.
And Dr. Nagata, you recently decided to change kind of the focus to include mm-hmm. sleep dentistry. What made you do that?
Well, I have sleep apnea.
Ah.
So what I was golfing with my buddies, and we have a couple beers, and they noticed that when I fell asleep before them, and they noticed that I stopped breathing for about 30 seconds or so. So that prompted me to get a sleep test. And then I was diagnosed with mild to moderate. And from that point on, I had to try that CPAP machine. Unfortunately, I was intolerant to that. I could not use it. It didn't help me. So that I had to find something for myself. So I knew there was a dental appliance that was being, you know, made for people who are intolerant to the machine. And this was about maybe 7-8 years ago that I started doing this. And now the evolution of these appliances are so good now that they can serve as a good alternative to the CPAP machine for those who have mild to moderate sleep apnea.
So are you finding that more dentists are kind of embracing this as a way of treatment?
I think we should. I think our job as dentists, our responsibility, because we see the patients oftentimes more than physicians, twice a year, and we're able to look at the back of the mouth. So my hygienists are now trained to look at the back of the mouth to see if there's any kind of obstruction. And my job is to screen. Doctor's job is to diagnose. So we can work together. And once I screen a patient and I can see there's a possibility of sleep apnea, they take a written test called an Epworth examination test. And if they score high, then my next step is to send them to a physician so that they can get a proper sleep study and a diagnosis.
So you talked about the CPAP machine, the devices, and there's also surgery too, right?
Surgery too. I'm not really familiar with what it's called, the UVVP, I believe, doctor?
The UPPP.
UPPP. Mm-hmm. I was close.
Yes, yes.
And what does that involve?
So basically, an ear, nose, and throat surgeon will go and evaluate someone's throat. And if there's a lot of crowding because of excessive tonsil size or a lot of soft tissue in the back of the throat, they will surgically remove all of that excess in order to create more space for breathing during the night.
So you do that at Kaiser?
It's actually done pretty widely. It's one of the standard alternatives to CPAP mm-hmm. for the treatment of sleep apnea.
So if you're CPAP resistant, I guess, and that's one other option.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I think the conversation has been rightly leading to the point of being highlighting CPAP as being the first line for mm-hmm. sleep apnea treatment, but certainly by no means is it accepted by all. Mm-hmm. And an oral appliance that are made by dentists or surgery from an ear, nose, and throat surgeon are very reasonable alternatives.
Maybe explain to our listeners what CPAP is. What does that stand for, or what does it do?
Right. So CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure, and it's basically a machine that sits on the nightstand that delivers constant pressure to the airway throughout the night. I often tell my patients it's like when you have a flat tire and you go to the gas station and you use the air pressure to reinflate that flat tire. A CPAP machine is providing air to reinflate a deflated airway and allow for an open airway and normal breathing through the night.
And so are those machines expensive?
They can be, but thankfully they're covered by all insurances now. I think it's been recognized because it is the gold standard therapy that it's ubiquitous and all members are able to procure it.
And so Dr. Nagata, you mentioned you tried it and you
I tried it,
couldn't
yeah.
use it.
You know, it's the standard of care for, you know, that's the first, like doctor said. I encourage the patients to try the CPAP. Give it a good try, and if they can't do it, then go back to the doctor and then maybe ask for an oral appliance as an alternative, yeah. But, yeah, I could not use it for some reason. I felt claustrophobic with it.
So it's big.
It's the type of mask that is placed on the face that could be a little bit confining if you're sleeping. You can't turn too much because you're attached to hoses, you know, but sometimes, just to mention that, we are now working on hybrid therapy where I'm working with a dental appliance and they can reduce the footprint of this machine by giving you a smaller mask, which is just basically called nasal cannulas. So this hybrid therapy is working really well for those people who are semi-intolerant to the CPAP machine, and I can use the dental appliance in conjunction to help them sleep well at night.
So there are advances being made in the treatment.
Yeah, we're working together to really, really get people to sleep better, you know, whether it's a CPAP machine or a sleep appliance. Bottom line is they need to go through all their stages of sleep.
And yeah. You had mentioned at one time that what the American Medical Association had said that, yeah, these devices can be helpful.
Yes, I think more and more they're being recognized as a definite alternative to the CPAP. But keep in mind that we're only limited to treat obstructive sleep apnea, meaning there's some kind of obstruction in your mouth versus the palate, your tongue. And so we're trying to get the jaw in a right position. It's called a mandibular advancement device. So we gradually move the lower jaw forward to increase the airway in the back, and everybody's different. So we need to get proper training into how much you can do, because you can induce what we call TMJ, or TM, you know, you get problem with the joint, problem with the muscle.
It's temporal mandibular
joint disorder. So we have to really be careful in our titration of the patient and really evaluate where there should be in space and where we're going to position that jaw for not only clinical efficacy, but also causing no more harm.
So it's not like you can just go to the drugstore and buy one of those dental guards and figure that's going to work for you.
You can't. So a lot of the patients that I see who have sleep apnea, they have a retruded jaw. It's called class 2 classification. So a lot of these people who have a retruded jaw, they have a lot, like a big overbite. Chances are, I would say, good 90% of them have some form of sleep apnea, whether it be snoring or something. So what we're trying to get them to do is, what I'm trying to do is just basically getting them to normally where their jaw should be, should there be so-called a class 1 instead of a class 2, which is reducing the overbite. And a lot of times, we don't have to move the jaw out a lot just to get them a good treatment position.
So is it really just sometimes something simple like that that can really change a person's sleep behavior or sleep patterns?
Yes. You know, sleep is something that is taken for granted until things go wrong. And it's amazing how simple solutions, number one, just being mindful about sleep and making it a priority and looking at the habits that one might have that lead up to sleep, and those things all make a difference. And as Dr. Nagata mentioned, you know, just realignment of the jaw, maybe changing sleep position,
correct,
might be those little things that lead to a big improvement in sleep.
Now, I know Kaiser just opened up a new sleep center.
Right.
So tell us about that.
So, you know, I think it's a commitment on the part of Kaiser to recognize sleep as being something that is growing in our awareness and in its impact on overall health and wellness. So we recently opened a sleep center at Pearl Ridge, and it's a 7-bed sleep center. But excitingly, our focus is really on testing in the home. So although our sleep lab is a new facility, the service is really focused on trying to expand our ability to detect things in someone's own sleep environment, in their bedroom with their usual patterns, which leads to the best and most accurate diagnosis.
Now, I have to say that I did take part in one of those
HSDs.
Yes, and, yeah. and I was able to get this device and go home and you know, you attach it to your hand right. and came back. And I got some good tips about that I sleep better on my side versus on my back. And just something simple like that helped me.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that's where these home sleep tests are so valuable because oftentimes in the artificial environment of a sleep lab, people don't sleep well. So we get data that may not be reflective of what happens on a night-to-night basis at home. So I think the exciting part of this is we'll be able to get a snapshot of what somebody's doing when they are sleeping in their own bed. And what feedback we give is much more telling and helpful.
We've been talking about sleep apnea, but what about like just insomnia?
Right. So, you know, of the millions of people that suffer from sleep disorders, insomnia is actually the most common one. And as many as 40% of all adults will suffer from some form of insomnia during their lifetime, meaning that they'll have a hard time falling asleep or staying asleep or just waking up too early. And a lot of that stems from stressors in one's life. And that can be good stress, meaning I got married, I got promoted, I have a baby, to negative stress, you know, losing somebody or a relationship comes to an end. So we all experience those things. So likelihood is insomnia will touch us. Insomnia is something that oftentimes sleep testing plays a part in the diagnosis in that it helps to exclude a physical reason that one can't sleep. So I usually do incorporate that in the evaluation of someone with insomnia. But if the sleep study is not helpful, it really becomes an evaluation of what is the pattern, what are the thinking, what are the feelings around sleep, and how can we change those?
We often hear that as you get older, you don't need so much sleep, or at least a lot of people seem to wake up earlier. I don't know. And that's been my experience. I find that as I get older, I'm up at 4. You know, I'm ready to go.
I guess as we get older, we're happy to get up.
Okay. What about that? I mean, you do often hear how people have died in their sleep. I mean.
Yes. Well, so speaking to the point about aging and sleep, there is definitely a tendency towards waking up earlier. That's just the natural process of time and the mind as it changes over time. But interestingly, if you look at people in their elder years and the total amount of sleep that they get, it's actually not terribly different from younger folks. It's just split up differently.
Yes.
So there's less sleep at night, more dozing and napping during the day. But when you add everything up, it actually approximates what was normal earlier on in life. So just patterns change.
Okay. We do have a call coming in. Mary from Kahala, can you hear us? What's on your mind?
Hi, I have a question. There is a home-based all-natural solution that I've heard about for to cure sleep apnea, but I'm not sure if there's anything that will cure sleep apnea if you lose weight or like this remedy, so-called home-based all-natural solution. It's something I could buy, but I don't know if I want to spend the money on it. My question.
Thank you.
Right. Mary, that's a really great question because I think if you were to Google sleep apnea treatment, you would find so many of these novel treatments that are being made available to the public. And I would say that as of yet, really the only approved sleep apnea treatments are the CPAP, as we mentioned, the oral appliance, and surgery. There are a couple of other devices that are recently approved and are becoming much more accepted as our experience grows with them, but they're all really devices that are prescribed by sleep specialists. Anything that is outside of that hasn't really been vetted yet. We don't have a lot of experience or data to say that they're meaningful. And I think what it really comes down to is that sleep apnea is an anatomic problem. It's a structural issue. Yes. And unless we can affect that structure, it's really not going to lead to a definitive cure.
Yeah, that's where I come in. It's an anatomic issue, so I'm trying to deal with the anatomy and getting that jaw in the right position. One comment I'd like to make is there's many different types of sleep apnea, and if you were to buy this device and you have central sleep apnea, it's going to cause more harm than good because with central sleep apnea, you need this CO2 trigger to, you know, maybe the doctor can speak more on that, but there's different types of sleep apnea, so be careful what you're getting online.
Anything you want to add to that, doctor?
Yeah, I that's such a wonderful point, because I think being in the care of a sleep specialist, no matter what treatment you choose, is valuable, because you want to make sure that the treatment is providing benefit rather than harm, and also that after whatever treatment you choose is started, that you get reevaluated to know that that therapy is actually working for you. So I appreciate that point, Dr. Nagata. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about sleep disorders and how to treat them, and you can join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And I'm going to take this point in the show to play a little clip. We have to credit the Freakonomics podcast. It's an episode called Economics of Sleep, and I believe it's President Clinton who was on the campaign trail. If we could play that.
What I came here tonight to promise you is that I will stay up late and get up early and work hard as long as it takes to turn this country around and give it back to the American people.
And then he was asked sometime later to give some advice for the incoming president. And he said, President Clinton said, in my long political career, most of the mistakes I made when I was too tired because I tried too hard and worked too hard. You make better decisions when you're not too tired. So that would be my only advice. And he was also asked in 2007 whether he thought not enough sleep was a problem in Washington politics. And he said, you have no idea how many Republican and Democratic members of the House and Senate are chronically sleep deprived because of this system. I know that this is an unusual theory, but I do believe sleep deprivation has a lot to do with some of the edginess of Washington. So interesting point, how it affects your job performance.
Absolutely. Yep.
Sleep is everything.
Yeah. And Dr. Nagata, you work with Tripler.
Yes.
I understand that they are doing all kinds of different things to really mm-hmm. try and help their members, because mm-hmm. Sleep problems are a real problem in
yeah.
our military.
I want to acknowledge Dr. and Kaiser, because they're progressive enough to understand that if you don't sleep, you're going to get sicker, and it's going to cost them more money, because you're going to end up with more diabetics, more people with high blood pressure. So the military is progressive, too, and they have a lot of, now we were mentioning soldiers with PTSD, they can't sleep, you know. I'm getting referrals for the soldiers, because a lot of them, if they go on the field, there's no electricity. Mm-hmm. So they need an appliance so that they can sleep and they can do whatever they need to do with a clear mind after a good night's sleep. So this dental appliance has been very valuable for the military, because it'll allow them to go on the field and still get a good night's sleep without the machine.
Right. So a lot of folks don't really think about that, you know, mm-hmm. because, you know, they've got to be ready for
anything.
They've
got to be ready. Yeah, they've got to be ready.
And so this is a way to be able to
and
keep
if
them
you
sharp.
And if you snore loud, maybe you alert the enemy, you know, I don't know.
But like you said, the military is doing things to help support its members to get a good night's sleep, because, you know, they've got to be healthy and ready
yeah.
to go.
I see 3 to 4 soldiers a week just wow. getting them, you know, and getting them with an appliance so that they can sleep better and perform better.
Yeah. And so that's just it's something simple, but it works.
It works. It works. And then there's many different appliances, and this appliance that I use is digital. So should they lose one or break one, it's easy to get another one made, provided they didn't do any dental work in between that interim that I made that appliance. And I've had several occasions where I've had to mail it to them, you know, because they lost one and they can't sleep without it. You know, it becomes like a crutch. You know, they need that. So in that way, I can tell that this device, the sleep appliance, is working for them.
Wow, so that must really yeah. kind of be very gratifying to know.
Well, it is. You know, it's not only can I make people smile better, but I can make them live longer or help them live longer, too, you know. So it's very rewarding to see that.
Yeah. And so what else do you see, doctor, in your practice and of all the folks that come through the sleep centers?
Yeah, so, you know, besides the vast majority of patients with sleep apnea of various types and insomnia, a fair number of people suffer from other nighttime sleep disorders like restless leg syndrome. We also see what's called parasomnia, which is a broad term that applies to unusual behaviors during sleep, and that covers things like teeth grinding, mm-hmm. sleep talking, sleep walking. We've had patients come through who cook in their sleep and drive
really?
In their sleep and do all manner
goodness.
Of other things. Granted, these are rare entities, but very impactful for anyone who experiences this or their bed partner, more importantly. So we do see a vast majority of sleep issues.
I was reading something about Sleeping Beauty syndrome, somebody who just wants to sleep for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I just saw a patient in my office this week. She's 18 and trying to get through her first year of college and actually has exactly that. It's otherwise known as long sleep syndrome. So basically, these people are engineered for some reason to just need more sleep than the average person does. When they get that amount of sleep, everything is normal. And if you do a sleep study and you look at the actual structure of their sleep, it's perfectly fine. It's just that for some reason they need more than the next person.
And so as far as treating that, it's just a matter of when you have to diagnose it.
Right.
And then,
right. Diagnose yeah. it. You want to exclude anything else that may be contributing to this need for more sleep, especially other medications. Oftentimes we contribute to poor sleep by giving medications that are disruptive. Other things like alcohol use or other drug use also, of course, will impact sleep. And once we look for those things, if they're not there, we actually encourage employers or schools to allow these people to find time to actually get a little sleep during the day yeah. to augment their nighttime sleep need.
And sometimes you hear the desire to sleep is sometimes linked to depression.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, we're finding more and more. It's kind of a cyclic relationship in that depression can lead to sleep disturbance, and that disturbance makes depression worse. So you want to break that cycle by diagnosing both, and being able to optimize both will help both the mood issue and the sleep issue correspondingly get better.
Okay, we do have a couple calls here. We have one Rachel from Kailua. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi, Rachel.
Hi. So I'm pretty sure my mom has sleep apnea, but she lives alone and there's no one to really kind of point it out to her. but I'm wondering if there's any direct link between, she does this frequent jaw clicking thing throughout the day that she denies doing, but everyone around her can audibly hear it. Is there any evidence of that being linked in some way to having sleep apnea?
The clicking of the jaw is an anatomic issue that is usually, it's called the temporal mandibular joint, and there's like a piece of cartilage that's on top of the joint that sometimes gets displaced that causes this clicking sound. But I don't think, in my opinion, there's not a direct relation to being a symptom of sleep apnea. It could be occurring if the dental appliance wasn't made correctly, then we're going to have a jaw problem, you know. So, doctor?
Yeah, so I think along with that, there is some data to suggest that people who have teeth grinding at night or jaw issues during the day do so because of an anatomic issue, mm-hmm. that underlying anatomic issue that might predispose to sleep apnea. So we are finding that in people who have a jaw issue and have any sleep symptoms, it's worth doing a sleep study just to see if there is a sleep apnea problem that kind of unifies all of it.
So if I could make a comment on that, it's like a chicken and an egg. You know, it's, you can be, do you have TMJ and sleep, or sleep and TMJ? And fascinating, they're interrelated. So we're finding a lot of people who come in for TMJ, they have a sleep problem.
Right.
And people who come in for sleep, they have a TMJ problem. So there's a distinct correlation between the two.
Mm-hmm. And we do have another caller on the line, Robert from Maui. What do you want to ask, or what can you share? Hi, Robert, are you there? Oh, we might have lost him. Just wanted to talk about the comment that Rachel from Kailua had. She was concerned about her mother, and I know there's concern about our elderly. Anything that you can, you know, throw out there that might help people if they've got an elderly parent or spouse?
Sure. I think, you know, sleep issues in general tend to become more prevalent as we age. They also become harder to identify because, as you mentioned earlier, Catherine, you know, sleep becomes a little bit more disorganized and fragmented anyway. So what is normal aging and what is sleep disorder becomes trickier. That being said, though, in our elderly, we also have a lot of other medical conditions that are linked to sleep problems, like high blood pressure and diabetes and heart problems and strokes. Even dementia and cancer have been linked to poor sleep. So mm-hmm. with that being said, this is a population we absolutely have to be mindful of. And I would encourage anyone listening, if you have an elderly spouse, parent, family member, friend, and there is anything about their sleep that seems out of the norm, or any concern or daytime symptoms for that matter, it's important to have a conversation with a physician so that you can start to tease out the normal from what might not be.
Right, and we should probably make the point that what you hear on the show really is not a substitute for going to your own doctor. So if it's getting yourself or your spouse or your parent to go in to see their physician, that's really a very important thing.
It is.
And then, Dr. Nagata, I have a question. Like, okay, so we have elderly, and let's say they have dentures. I mean, how does that work with a dental device?
Yeah, you know, I encourage, we have a dental appliance to answer that question for edentulous, or people without teeth. Some people wear their dentures at night. Some people do not. It depends. So we can create an appliance for both. When you have dentures, if they're not fitting well, the sleep appliance won't fit well. So a lot of times we make it directly to their present condition if they're without teeth, and it works.
You know, okay. It works. So there are
alternatives for edentulous people.
To deal
with
that.
People without teeth or partially edentulous, meaning have some teeth. Yeah.
Okay. We do have Robert from Maui back on the line. What would you like to share, Robert?
Good morning. Hi. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a practitioner of a breathing method called the Buteyko breathing method that treats sleep apnea, insomnia, other sleep disorders, and it treats a wide range of other symptoms. And it's based on the stresses of life. And the method was created by an MD in the Soviet Union in the 1950s. And after he discovered a certain aspect of the biochemistry and the respiratory system, he applied what he had discovered to asthmatics and had wonderful success with that. And then over the course of the next decades behind the Iron Curtain, applied it to high blood pressure, to sleep disorders, a whole range of things. And basically there's a very simple process of correcting the breathing, to calm the breathing, which is difficult actually to apply to one's life because the breathing habit is very deeply set. And what he said was that basically there is a symptom that's overriding in modern times called chronic hidden hyperventilation syndrome. So people with the stresses of life across the spectrum, which you have discussed a little bit, each one increases respiration. And there's another aspect of Buteyko that actually, because there's a big problem with mouth breathing, mm-hmm. and the mouth is open, the mouth changes its structure. Mm-hmm. When a person learns to, and as this applies this therapy to their life, close their mouth when they're breathing, keep the tongue in the mouth, the structure of the face can change, and it really can, there's a aspect at night, because we don't know what we're doing at night while we're breathing, of taping the mouth. Many of my clients have slept for the first time by taping their mouth at night.
Thank you, Robert. Dr. Nagata, you were nodding your head when you first spoke, so you're familiar with this.
I've heard of Buteyko. Yeah, I've had my patients do the exercises. So, and we have them tape their mouth at night, even with the dental appliance. But going back to what he's saying, and I want to make this point clear, is that because it's an anatomic issue, we have to catch it early in children. And a lot of children are being misdiagnosed with ADHD and bedwetting. It's because of lack of sleep. And going back to what he's saying about mouth breathing, if you have a child that's mouth breathing, we have to stop them from mouth breathing as early as possible. One of the things that I promote when I see my pregnant moms is just make sure you breastfeed as long as you can. because if that tongue doesn't work correctly and we don't swallow correctly, then the upper palate will not form correctly. When we have a narrow upper palate, we have no room for the tongue, and now the tongue becomes an obstruction. So we're working with a lot of children now. We have a lot of programs where we can have small devices to help the children swallow correctly and keep their mouth closed and eliminate the mouth breathing.
Dr. Makakau, you were nodding your head. So do you see a lot of children in your practice?
Yeah, well, not in my practice specifically, but there is so much data emerging to suggest that, exactly as Dr. Nagata pointed out, sleep disorders don't just happen, you know, in midlife. Oftentimes they are rooted in childhood and the development of the anatomic structures. And so being mindful, I think, of certain symptoms in kids like ADHD or excessive sleepiness or mood issues, those are all our red flags that maybe underlying sleep problem is there.
And we have a number of calls here. We've got one, Alice from Waikoloa. You have a question about your CPAP device?
Yes, I do. I've had a CPAP device since 2015. And before I got it, I got a consult to get a dental appliance. And but I've got a lot of dental work and a couple of bridges and some crowns and that kind of thing. So I was afraid to get fitted for that device because then I may have to redo some of my dental work, which can be expensive, etc. So I'm wondering if there's a way. I would prefer having a dental device rather than the CPAP machine. Is there a way that I can be fitted even with my all of my dental work?
The appliances fit very passively, so there's no tension or no trauma being placed or pressure being placed on your existing restorations. Once you come in and you get a mold done or a digital scan done for a dental appliance, should you get any dental work in the future, then we need to adjust the appliance. But it will not harm your dental existing dental condition at all.
And we have another question, another caller, actually, I believe Mary from Kailua. You have a question about snoring.
Hi, yes, I do. Good morning. I am probably like a lot of people hearing more and more about sleep disorders, and I have been told that I snore, and also I tend to sleep, I feel like, very well, and I'm alert and do just fine during the day, but does that mean that I should have some concerns about potential sleep apnea, or I have been told that mildly I have, I've been told every now and then I have a sleep apnea episode. So should I, is that something to concern myself with? I seem to be just fine.
Right. What a wonderful question, actually, because I think you're speaking to what many people are probably thinking as they listen to the program. Now, snoring is a very common symptom of sleep apnea, but yet can be unrelated or related to other things like nasal allergies or nasal congestion, things like that. So in and of itself, snoring is not necessarily equated to sleep apnea. But that being said, if you are having any other symptoms, and as you mentioned, Mary, having a witness apnea, somebody saying they've seen any evidence of that, that's actually a much more specific indicator of sleep apnea and would definitely warrant further evaluation with a sleep study. And it may come to pass after being evaluated that if there is any apnea, it's very mild or minimal, and maybe it's really just truly a snoring issue. But that reassurance is priceless, yeah. And that's where the evaluation with a sleep study is really a helpful thing, either way, whatever it finds.
I recommend a sleep study. Yeah.
Now, I know that I've been known to snore, and mm-hmm. So I've used those strips that kind of help you help open your nasal passages, and I find that helps. I feel a lot better in the morning.
Right. And that's actually a good thing. You know, so many things like the Breathe Right nasal strips that help to improve our nasal breathing, along with nasal sprays and things over the counter, are all useful things. The only caution, really, though, is that once snoring is obliterated, it doesn't mean that the sleep apnea issue is correspondingly gone. So it is good to always have the evaluation and know for sure that the treatment is working.
And we have another call on the line. Stacy from Kaimuki, you have a question about depression? Hi, Stacy. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Yes, what's your question?
So I was hoping we could revisit the depression and sleep deprivation cycle. I have debilitating insomnia, and I did do a sleep study that showed that, you know, I basically have almost no slow wave sleep at all. And I've tried all of the traditional routes, you know, diet, exercise, talk therapy, medication, to no avail. And so I guess my question is, are there any newer techniques or more experimental techniques that tend to target this and have shown some effectiveness?
Well, right now, the main way to treat insomnia, particularly in the setting of what sounds like a normal sleep study outside of lack of slow wave sleep, so meaning there's nothing physiologic in the form of apnea or teeth grinding or leg kicking that's interrupting sleep, really the standard right now is something called CBTI, which stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia. And basically it's a means of addressing one's thinking around sleep, which is a learned behavior. Insomnia, we're finding, is something that develops over years, and it tends to happen in people who are very mindful of their bodies in general and their sleep in particular. So a therapist actually helps to use different techniques that help to retrain one's mind to allow sleep to happen naturally. And this has been found over and over again to be much better than medications, which tend to wear off over time. We need more and more to achieve the same effects. So medications in the long run are not recommended. And while good sleep habits in the form of getting enough sleep and exercise and limiting alcohol and caffeine, those are important adjuncts, but by no means curative for insomnia.
And if you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about sleep disorders and how to treat them. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And we had a shy caller who wanted to share or had a question about whether sleep deprivation is correlated with Alzheimer's. She writes, some world leaders have died from Alzheimer's, and some world leaders are generally sleep deprived. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so there is a lot of data that are early on, but suggestive that there is a correlation, not so much between sleep deprivation and Alzheimer's per se, but between sleep apnea and Alzheimer's dementia. And the link people are thinking is related to low oxygen. Mm-hmm. So as we were talking about earlier with the anatomic problem, there's a blockage in the plumbing. So as we breathe, the air is just not getting down to where it needs to go. So our bodies are effectively being suffocated during the night. And the brain, which is an organ that requires a lot of oxygen to function, suffers for it. And there is some thinking that if this goes on long enough unchecked, then dementia can be something that is a long-term consequence.
Interesting. We have another call. Let's see, Wayne from Honolulu. You have a question about CPAP.
I'm a current Kaiser member, and I did go to the sleep lab, but it was at home, I guess, test. And I was outfitted with a Respironics CPAP unit, and it seems to be working all right. However, there seems to be a lack in regards to follow-up subsequent to having your appliance given to you, and there's no protocol in regards to going back every year or every 2 years to get your the little SD card that's in the unit to be read, how you're doing, and to see if you have to take any other precautions or additional, corrective action to, you know, keep yourself in check. And I'm wondering if Kaiser's going to be able to work with Apria and get a set protocol set up so you can go in, like, either annually, semi-annually, or whatever the case may be. Currently, right now, you have to do it on your own.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Wayne. Dr. Makika?
Yes. So, you know, there is no current gold standard guideline nationally as to how frequently you need to have your data downloaded and reviewed. Currently, the working guideline is that when a person is set up on a CPAP machine, then their provider, be it their primary care doctor or their pulmonologist or any other specialist who initiated the whole workup and treatment, will usually see that person in follow-up to make sure that the treatment is going okay. And once we're on the path of success, towards success, meaning that the user is doing CPAP well, is tolerating, and is benefiting from it, then it becomes more of this annual, just kind of a check-in. How are you doing? Is your weight stable? Any new medications? Any new medical problems? And if everything is pretty stable, then we actually don't need to review that data, because the assumption is, have you gone through a good sleep study? We know exactly what pressure you need. That shouldn't really deviate. But if there are changes in terms of symptoms, or if weight changes by more than 10% from a baseline, meaning you gain or lose more than 10% from when you did your sleep study, then you probably do need to have more of a intensive review and evaluation for changes in your therapy.
And what's the maintenance on a device, a CPAP device or dental guard? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, so the device itself for CPAP anyway, it's a pretty hardy machine. The lifetime is usually 5 years or longer, but it does require some daily upkeep, like anything that is medical. So generally we tell people, for the mask that sits on their face and the hose that connects the mask to the machine, you want to make sure to clean that regularly, at least every week, if not daily. And there are filters that help to kind of keep the air that's being pumped into the machine clean, and those filters need to be replaced regularly. But outside of that, there isn't too much more in the way of mechanical maintenance.
What about for the dental devices?
Yeah, we teach the patient how to clean it, number one. It's considered a durable medical device, DME. So I believe some of the insurance companies, should something happen to it, if they're heavy clenchers or grinders, I think they can replace it in 3 to 5 years. But usually, you know, I don't have too much problems with it breaking, because of the one I provide has a little bit of a give to it.
Okay.
So it's flex.
And we have another call from the Big Island. Ruth, are you still on the line there?
I am.
So,
aloha.
What would you like to share with us?
I wanted to share with you a sleep apnea success story.
Great.
I started having sleep trouble when I menopaused. It was hard for me to notice because I was not a person who required a lot of sleep. I would sleep 4 to 5 hours a night from, I don't know, since I've been 15. So then I went, oh no, this is definitely happening, and I'm not getting any REM time. I'm not sleeping. So I tried a bunch of things, including cognitive therapy, brain training, melatonin, you know, over-the-counter night help, homeopathics, creams, you know.
You tried it all,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. I was kind of went through all that. And so I talked to my doctor, and because I really felt I needed a sleep study, and I was asked, well, do you wake up gasping? I think I would remember that. And then my favorite one was, do I snore? And I sleep alone, so I'm like, I don't know. I could ask my dog. I don't know if I snore, you know. I don't wake myself up doing it. Mm-hmm. So finally, a year ago this month, I got a sleep study done. That was something that I did at home. They gave me this whole kit. And I thought it was a rule out, because most of the people that I know that have sleep apnea are overweight. And to my surprise, I had a 90-minute period on that trucking that I was only getting 80% oxygen. Mm-hmm. And they came back and said, yep, that's sleep apnea. So then I went into a clinic and checked out the CPAP to see if that worked, and it was heaven. And so I finally got my CPAP in December of last year, and it's such a relief. You know, you got to remember that sleep deprivation is a form of torture.
Okay.
I agree.
I mean, seriously. And you know, when you want to know if lack of sleep leads to depression, of course it does. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually depression, exhaustion, many things.
Well, we're very happy that yeah. this has worked out for you, and thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
We do have another call from the Big Island. I understand you have a question, Emery, about wanting to compare different CPAPs. What's that all about?
Well, I've been given a CPAP to do for 3 months, and I had a full face mask, and that just kept me from sleeping because I sleep on my stomach, and it was like having being noosed and ready to be hung.
Oh, okay.
So I changed it to just the nose piece, and I'm not sure that it's doing the same thing. And I'm coming up to a police block here. So.
Okay. All right.
I'm trying to get to an appointment at 12 o'clock. So.
Okay.
I'm going to have to drive down past him when I get off the phone here. So hang on for 1 second.
Okay. Maybe we'll see if we can get an answer here for you. So there sounds like there's different types of CPAPs, older ones, newer ones.
Yes. Well, the actual CPAP machine is pretty standardized. There are a few different manufacturers, but in essence, they all deliver the same therapy. What's really distinctive and individualized is the mask. So the machine sits on the nightstand. There's a hose that is connected to the machine, and it fits into a mask that sits on your nose or over your mouth. Basically, it's what delivers the pressure to your airway. And that comes in so many different sizes and shapes in order to maximize comfort and to fit each individual's needs. So to answer the caller's question, really it's like a car. You go to the dealership, you pick what you like, but they all get you from point A to B. So the mask, no matter what fits over your face, as long as it's comfortable and it delivers the pressure effectively without a lot of leakage, then it's going to do the same as the next mask that you might want to try.
If I can make a comment, you know, the previous call I talked about being overweight. There's a lot of skinny women who have sleep apnea. I'm shocked. And there's a clinical thing called upper airway resistance syndrome called UARS with doctor, we probably know, which is like a subclinical sleep apnea. Would you consider it to be like that? They're upper airway resistant, but they're not really apneic yet, and they're not getting their full cycle of sleep.
Right. So yeah. It's almost like a mini apnea syndrome, right?
Correct.
And it's definitely found to be in women who are of normal body weight typically. I think the other really important point that previous caller mentioned, she said she went through menopause and subsequently found her sleep to be more disturbed. Mm. What we find with sleep problems, sleep apnea in particular, is that prior to menopause, women are only half as likely as men. So when you imagine an apneic patient, you think of an overweight elderly man falling asleep on the couch, remote control is drooping from their hand. But in actuality, after menopause, men and women are equally likely. As many as 50% of women post-menopause can develop sleep apnea. So it's something that we recognize with that life process, we have to be mindful.
And we do have a question, I believe, a caller from Maui. He had a question about medical marijuana and insomnia. Lisa, what's on your mind?
Yes, I'm here.
You have a question?
I was wondering if, I understand you were talking about insomnia as well during this whole discussion. I didn't hear the whole thing, so I don't know that medical marijuana or recreational marijuana or even hemp would be helpful for people dealing with apnea, but it damn well is helpful for people who have insomnia, and I've been more on that bracket. So the people who don't have a physical issue I would think that maybe if they get so conked out that it might be actually maybe dangerous for apnea patients. I don't know, but as the people who don't have a physical problem, insomnia, it's astonishing. It's instant. It's changed my life. It saved my life. More people need to be talking about cannabis and how it can help people.
All right. Thank you, Lisa.
You know, it's medical marijuana. You know, if it works, it works.
We have another question from a listener. Is anyone in Hawaii doing a drug-induced sleep endoscopy to get a better diagnosis of what anatomical problems are causing apnea?
Mm. Interesting question, and I think that's an age-old one. When sleep apnea was first described, because it is about the anatomy, there is significant interest in the field at trying to define where is the problem, where in the airway are we seeing the obstruction, because that will help us to target that and improve therapy. Unfortunately, what has been found is that with most imaging studies, MRIs, CAT scans, even drug-induced ones, they don't mimic the dynamic nature of sleep. So as we have found over time, sleep is something that is not just a one-size-fits-all. When you fall asleep, you might be in light sleep, you turn on your back, you go into deep sleep. It's constantly changing. And for that reason, we've not been able to reliably image the airway, even using medications, to mimic sleep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Makikau and Dr. Nagata. Any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
When in doubt, get a sleep study.
Okay.
Yes, and along with that, as Dr. mentioned earlier, you know, always have a conversation with your physician. Don't assume that what is happening with your sleep is normal or something that you can cope with. It's definitely worth getting it checked out.
Okay. Dr. Makikau is the chief of pulmonology and sleep at Kaiser Permanente Hawaii. Dr. Dennis Nagata is with Landmark Dental, who has been trained in dental
sleep medicine.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you have any questions, the best thing is to contact your doctor and start the conversation. Again, thanks very much for joining us here in the studio today. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for taking part. And if your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the TalkBack line and leave your comments. That number is 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.